Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Good morning to you, 9-11 on KDX. A little bit late getting started, but I appreciate you being here with me. Via the telephone is the voice of the BYU Cougars, Greg Wrubell. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Andy. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for coming on the program today. I was like, well, wait a minute. Basketball season's over. Football season. Why is Greg on? Well, there's some happenings in the NCAA, and I thought, well, let's get a guy. And by the way, KDXU is Southern Utah's official location for BYU. In fact, it's the only place in Southern Utah you can find BYU sports, and Greg Wrubell getting her done. Greg, I had a guy come up to me the other day, and he's like, hey, man, I got all kinds of questions about the NCAA and the lawsuits and the $21 million a year that schools are going to be able to pay and all this stuff. And I said, okay, you got questions. So do I. And so I'm like, well, let's see if we can sift through this together. First, Greg, can you tell us about the big NCAA lawsuit and settlement?
Yeah, well, primarily, first of all, I want to say good morning to all your listeners, and we really appreciate being on the air down in Southern Utah, having that relationship stay strong and having Cougar fans down there be able to tune in. So that's a big thing, first and foremost. Secondly, yes, this nearly $3 billion settlement was aimed at forestalling a number of other potential developments that could really fracture things. And I think it's the simplest thing, but it's also the most underlining development we've had in college athletics for decades. And to put not too fine a point on it, Andy, it's the end of amateurism, right? Mm. If we were already kind of heading that way, but I think the headline to me from the summer is we've reached the end of amateurism in college athletics. So we're heading more and more toward a professional model in a lot of ways. But where there's a real difference, though, is this. There's not a professional team or franchise or organization that would want its teams to have a collection of players all as unrestricted free agents on 1 year contracts.
Yeah.
And that's what college rosters are going to turn out to be in one respect, is everybody's an unrestricted free agent and everybody's on a 1 year contract. And nobody would do that professionally. That doesn't make any sense. But that's what we've got right now in college athletics. And it just requires a change in how we perceive the sport and the sports we've loved for so long at the college level, because there was a difference. There was a separation. It wasn't simply another version of professional sports. And now we're getting closer and closer to that direction. Now, there will always be things that keep it special. College traditions and college sentimentality is not that of the professional game. But there are a lot of things that the settlement has done, Andy, that lead us toward that that kind of perception.
Essentially, schools will be able to pay athletes. Now, some of the questions that arise right away, very, very first off the top, is what happens to scholarships? Are they done? How does that work?
Yeah, I've heard nothing about the doing away of scholarships. In fact, you've heard more about expanding the number of scholarships, but maybe cutting down on the notion of walk-ons. And would walk-ons even exist anymore? So everybody on the roster would be on a scholarship, but there wouldn't be as many players. In one way, it might cut down on your overall expenses for a particular roster. So that's yet to be decided and settled. I don't think scholarships go away. But, you know, there's also the notion that, you know, the student-athletes were being taken care of previously with the scholarship, the cost of attendance stipend. There were a number of things that had been kind of added to make their comfort, you know, more prominent. But this just takes it to an entirely different level. But I don't think scholarships go away. That's not what I've been told or heard. It's been, in fact, what we might see is that roster spots go away mm-hmm. and number of scholarships might actually increase. Like, for example, a sport like baseball, you might actually see scholarships be apportioned individually as opposed to a small number of scholarships over 30 to 40 players. They might now all become scholarship players, for example. That's been a possibility. And then, of course, how does this relate to Title IX? Do all the Title IX considerations remain, or do they become subject to this new, you know, world order to where there need not be a total equality or equity mm. in how those, you know, male and female sports are apportioned? So there's a lot of questions yet to answer with the major development being the settlement and taking this out of the courts and now into the campuses themselves and giving them essentially resources to apportion how they see fit.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, Greg, but BYU has operated its athletic department in the black the last few years, right? But you have schools like Utah and Utah State that are actually losing money, and now you got this additional $21 million they're going to be on the hook for. That really complicates things, for especially for state-run schools that aren't necessarily making a bunch of money like UT or Alabama.
Yeah, right, and non P4 programs, right? Because now we have the true P4, the big two and the next two, and then the rest of college athletics. And BYU is a private institution. Its numbers are a little more nebulous. They're not always out there as much as the public institutions. But yes, they have been able to run their department, athletic department, in a very efficacious manner and prudently sound. And there are some numbers that get released that show that BYU is doing things pretty responsibly or very responsibly. And everybody will have a different obligation now. And there's also, the settlement is spread out amongst all these schools. They're all on the hook for some of it, like you said. But I don't think BYU is in any danger any kind of fiscal detriments because of their P4 status right now. It's a big difference. Joining the Big 12 has been a big boon for BYU that way.
Here's a simple question, but maybe hard to answer. Will athletes now become employees of the universities?
I don't think it's going to go that way. There's enough of a discretion between the beneficiaries as recipients and the beneficiaries as employees. And I hope it doesn't get there. It seems like it opens up a whole different can of worms that would be a lot more difficult to manage. I think what we've seen right now is an apportionment of resources that the schools are going to be tasked with figuring out how to work with. It doesn't do away with collectives. I think collectives are still going to be folded into this new environment. I think what it does is allow schools like BYU and others who've had, boosters, donors willing to contribute to a higher level in the past that were restricted from doing so, from now doing so in a legal fashion. And I think a school like BYU might benefit as much as anybody, because of the amount of support that the school does have from people willing to contribute.
We had a kid from Southern Utah who is in the NFL, Penei Sewell, plays offensive tackle for the Detroit Lions. He signed one of the richest contracts in offensive lineman history, making somewhere in the neighborhood, his contract extension is like $20 to $25 million a year. That's a lot of money, obviously, but compared to quarterback money, that's less than half. So are we going to see that kind of inequality in college, where schools are paying big money for a quarterback or a running back or a wide receiver, and then a lineman or, a linebacker might make much less?
I think it's going to have to be done that way, because not every recruit and not every position has an equal contribution on the program or in the team or on the team or in the program. So I think it's possible. I've always, when this first started, happening a couple of years ago, Andy, I just worried about the effect in locker rooms, like how team chemistry might be affected by all of these numbers floating around. Because, you get a kid that comes out of nowhere that's not a money guy, quote unquote, ends up being one of your best players, but he's not, quote unquote, being rewarded the same way as the big money guy that is not working hard and has lost his spot on the team or lost his spot on the depth chart. And how does that affect the workings within the locker room? And so I always think about that. I think college has always been special that way because of the kind of team fabric you can create, because you are essentially amateurs. Now, there's always been exceptions to that particular rule, but for the most part, things were pretty well contained. And now, with all bets being off, how does that really affect every collegiate locker room we talk about now?
Yeah, I can just imagine coming out of a play, maybe your guard let a guy through and sacked the quarterback who makes $300,000 a year from the school is scolding a lineman who makes, $50,000 a year or something. And yeah, I don't know how that's going to go. Very interesting. And you mentioned the 1 year thing, the transfer portal. That has been, to me, that is the biggest heartbreaking thing of it all, is that college sports was always, and yeah, you only got guys for 2, 3, 4 years, but they were your guys. You know, you had a guy and you knew he loved your school and you knew that he loved your coaching staff and you loved your school and you loved him because he loved them. And you know, with the transfer portal, guys are, I didn't get enough playing time. I'm going to leave. Or I don't like this coach. Or I didn't, you know, they didn't let me shoot the three-pointer as much as I wanted to. Or that we don't pass the ball enough. So I'm going to go to a school that does. That really seems to be something that, I don't know, it's making it harder for us college sports fans.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. The things you described are the things that we kind of lose now. And, college sports was always special for the reasons you mentioned. And there have always been people who've wanted to transfer. But because of the rules we had in the past, it really made a school and a player think hard about that decision. Because if you left, you'd have to sit for a year. You couldn't play for a year. You'd have to bide your time. You could do it once. And now you don't sit. You can do it as many times as you want. There's much less risk involved. It's a different vibe. And yes, even players you figured were, you know, quote unquote made for your school might just find themselves unhappy and decide to head somewhere else. And that'll be one of the most difficult adjustments, I think, is the turnaround of rosters. Because in the past, and one of the things I loved about my job, Andy, was you'd see a freshman class come in and you get to know those players and their families in a lot of cases over the next 4 or 5 years. And when that senior night came, senior night was full of emotion because you'd seen that player and those people go through so many things for so many years. And it really was a full circle moment. And now, you know, senior night, quote unquote, is it going to have the same meaning as it ever used to? I don't know that it will. No. Because it's just different. Right. And again, nobody would ever do this professionally. You would never have a roster comprised of every player that can leave after a year. That wouldn't make sense.
No.
And yet you're paying them money like they are professionals. And so what's the next step? Do you get into contracts? You know, does this become a contract? And can you trade a player? How far do we take this? But I just think it's really tough. And I feel for the coaches who have to re-recruit their rosters every single season now. It changes the way everything is done. And kids coming out of high school now won't be recruited the way they used to, for sure. Because coaches, why waste your time and your energy and your resources with younger players like that when you can simply restock with the portal at the highest level every year?
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's actually what popped into my head, too, the whole contract thing. Maybe we're headed toward a deal where, yeah, I'm going to pay a quarterback $500,000 to stay here or to come here, and I'm going to sign him to a 2 or 3 year deal or maybe a deal to stay all the way through college. That might be where we're headed.
Again, it wouldn't make sense to do it the way we're doing it now in college, the professional ranks, and yet that's what you've got right now is a bunch of, you know, quasi-professional teams with nothing but unrestricted free agents.
I think about some guys that have come through BYU that we saw flashes. Even Jimmery, maybe the most famous BYU basketball player ever, when he came to BYU as a freshman and got some playing time and hit some shots, we were all like, boy, how good is this guy going to be in a year or 2 years or 3 years? And then you look at a guy like Caleb Lohner, who was on the basketball team a couple of years ago. The potential was there. We saw him get a little bit better into his sophomore year, and then poof, he was gone. And now he's, I think, on his third school, isn't he?
He'll be at Utah as both a basketball player and a football player this season. You know, Jimmer's interesting because he's cut from a different cloth, and if you throw Jimmer in today's era, I'm not sure how much changes with him because he's such a good kid and loved BYU, but. You remember how many games he started as a freshman?
No,
zero.
None, really?
Zero.
Wow.
Didn't start a single game, you know? And could you name most people can't name the point guard who started ahead of Jimmer Fredette, but he didn't start, it was Ben Murdoch, but he started zero games as a freshman, you know? And yet would that kind of player in this kind of environment go, well, clearly they don't, they don't see the value in me, I'm taking off. Jimmer wasn't that kind of guy necessarily, but, you know, would a coach make the same decision with a guy like Jimmer now, knowing the portal is out there? Maybe not.
Probably not, yeah. Probably not. So Well, okay, so this to me right now, it feels like, Greg, this is a painful time for college sports, and we're in a transition that you kind of, you know how it is, painful parts of your life, you just kind of got to get through them to get to the next stage in your life. That's kind of where I feel like we are in college sports. Is there going to be in 2, 3, 5, 7 years from now where we're all settled and this is college sports, or is this it?
Well, I think the next big move, if there's going to be one, will probably be a separation of football from the rest of college athletics and the creation of a football organization at the collegiate level. It might be more geographical. It might take on more of an NFL feel. That's maybe like the next big thing, the way I could see happening. The Big Ten and the SEC, what they've already done is kind of put themselves at a different plateau, but I still think they've got to have a lot more of the country involved. And so I don't know they can purely break off those two conferences. I think what they've already done with the financial redrawing and how the Big Ten and the SEC get more money, I think that's an indication of where this thing is going. And I don't think it could be a complete break off, but I think they've already given themselves more money than everybody else. I think that's what they wanted. But that feels like to me like the next big thing is that football is such a different animal, it might break off in some way. So I think we could see something along those lines moving forward. And what you said a moment ago is right. I mean, so much talk about the off the court and off the field stuff. It's so refreshing when you can drive around and hear a conversation on sports radio or one of the national networks just about the teams and the season coming up. Like today, for example, the Big 12 will have a bunch of football game times released, right? And that'll get people excited about the games themselves, because I think we need to get back into the games as quickly as possible. It's been pretty tiring, all this other talk, and it's life, it's reality, I get it. And yes, we will settle in, we'll get used to the new way of doing things, but it's just fun to think about a college football Saturday again, and all those emotions that day kind of engenders.
All right, real quick, I only got about 2 minutes left. I want to ask about Kevin Young, the new basketball coach at BYU. It was painful for BYU fans to see Mark Pope leave, although I don't think any of us can blame him. If Kentucky comes calling, you're not going to say no, right? But how's the fit, Kevin Young, at BYU, do you feel?
Wow, it's a totally different way of doing things now for BYU in a lot of different ways, right? They've gone to the NBA ranks to get their coach. He has made some incredible inroads already with signings that he's made and is about to make. It's going to be fun. It's a different way of doing things at BYU. And where they got him from, just first and foremost, is the biggest difference. Coming from the highest level of the professional ranks to a school that he has no real natural ties to, beyond his wife and his family. So that's different. And I think it's kind of exciting. It's a new way of doing things. And like Tom Holmoe said in a different interview the other day, they're tapping into a skill set that maybe BYU hasn't had at that level before on the sidelines. And so I'm excited to see what kind of style he brings, the kind of talent he brings in, and what kind of team he's able to produce in his first year coaching in the Big 12.
Now, the biggest, some say maybe the biggest signing in BYU basketball history happened in the last 48 hours, and I'm gonna butcher his name, but I know Greg has done his homework and already knows how to say his name correctly. I'm gonna say Igor Demene. Am I close?
I think we're gonna ultimately hear what it actually is supposed to say. Igor Demene, and I've heard a couple of different versions. I think we'll ultimately get from him the way he wants us all to say it. Now, it's not official, right? It's not been officially announced as a signing from BYU at this point, but all indications are that's in the works. And so it'll be an exciting day if and when that transpires. Because it's, again, the level of talent is that is a next-level guy right there. And so, that'd be great if it becomes official sooner than later.
All right, he's Greg Wrubell. Now, if you want to listen to Greg and the BYU Cougars when football starts, when basketball gets going, there's only one place in southern Utah where you can listen to Greg, and that's 890 and 92.5 FM KDXU. Greg, enjoy listening to your call. Always enjoy it, and appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Thanks for the invitation. Always good to speak with you. Have a great day and week and summer as we're now into the off season.
Yeah, hopefully the summer goes fast so we can get to football again.
You got it.
Thanks, Greg. See you later.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Hey, thanks for tuning in today, 937 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. A little treat for you here. It was, 1997, and so I would have been, 31, watching the NBA Western Conference Finals. Late in the game, Utah Jazz, and by the way, the anniversary of sorts, late in the game, Utah Jazz trailing the Houston, actually tied. The game was tied at 100 with just 2.8 seconds left when this happened.
Stockton, open three, yes! John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Finals!
Remember that moment? Yeah, that was 1997. It was yesterday, actually, the anniversary, which would made it, 27-year anniversary of John Stockton sending the Utah Jazz to the NBA Finals. If you haven't been a Jazz fan all those years, and it's kind of new, that was a big moment in the state of Utah, in the history of Utah, kind of longing for respectability. We just wanted to be... respected, loved, whatever, and that was a big moment. Not long after that, a few years after that, the Jimmer Fredette sensation happened, and BYU got a lot of that national respectability, but national clout and coverage. And but yeah, that might have been the beginning. And you know, we have this Black Desert PGA tournament coming, and I had someone say, you know, this is the biggest sporting event to happen in Utah since the Olympics, and before that, since the Utah Jazz played in the NBA Finals. And yeah, it got me to reflect back on John Stockton hitting that three-pointer. And Bill Walton, who passed away the other day, was the one. If you listen to the audio of that again, listen for Bill Walton, who was doing color commentary for the game right after they. So Walton's sitting courtside. He sees John Stockton come open on a screen set by Karl Malone. And listen for Bill Walton's, listen to this. If I can get it queued up. There we go.
Stockton, open three. Yes! John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Finals.
Again, listen for the uh-oh. Yeah. Bill Walton knew. Bill Walton, always a big fan of the state of Utah, passed away at the age of 71 after a bout with cancer yesterday. And, you know, we wish his family the best. I'm going to miss Bill Walton. I really enjoyed his style, his commentating style. And of course, again, he was actually there for some of the big ones. He broadcast some Jimmer games, and he was there for that moment in Utah Jazz history when they went to the NBA Finals for the first time. Sadly, the Jazz couldn't get over the Michael Jordan dynasty and lost to him 2 years in a row in 97 and 98. But still, fun to reflect back on and kind of take a look at. Appreciate it. Again, Greg Rubel coming on today and talking about NCAA sports. And it's still all up in the air. And that's kind of what I said to Greg. Was it just kind of feels like we don't know what's going to happen. But it's kind of the end of amateurism. If schools now are allowed, and it, kind of to summarize again, schools now can pay athletes up to $21 million. That's total. So if you pay your quarterback $20 million, you only have $1 million to pay everybody else in the entire athletic department. And will it affect football? Absolutely. Will it affect basketball? Yes. Will it affect other sports? I don't know. Are they going to save money to get a sprinter on the track team, or to get a really good pitcher on the softball team, or to, you know, get a slugger on the baseball team? Those are questions that we just don't know the answer to just yet. But I really feel like we're in a transition in college sports, that it's going from here to there. We know where here is, and we're going to discover in the next few years where there is in college sports. It may be Greg Wrubell seemed to think that it was probably going. What was going to happen was it was going to be a separation of college football, where you're still going to have all the big schools, and they're still going to have the playoffs and you know all the bowl games and stuff like that. But it's going to be separated out so that you'll have football programs, and then you'll have the rest of the athletic department. And I would add to that, maybe basketball separates itself out too down the road. NCAA March Madness has become so big that may also be different or coming to an end or whatever. So 9:42 on KDXU. A couple of the other things we want to talk about. Some comments about yesterday's program a little bit. I would say yesterday I probably post show got more calls and texts and emails than I have for maybe any other show I've ever done on KDXU. It had to do with, we talked about the political races in the state of Utah and we were trying not to tell you who to vote for, but we were trying to give you an idea, a feel of the different candidates. And Jimmy Kesson, who is our political kind of insider on KDXU, had some things that were unflattering to say about a couple of candidates. And I know some of you didn't like what he had to say. Jimmy, I talked to Jimmy and, you know, he stands by what he said. He actually said, I'm not afraid to say how I feel and what I think. But, again, politics are a weird animal because you have, you know, people get their feelings hurt, one way or another, for things that are said and done. And these are, generally speaking, every one of them good people. Not all of them, but most of them are really good people. Who otherwise, you know, like two competitors might be good friends outside the political arena, but the way our system is set up, they end up being rivals and almost enemies. And so, you can go back and listen to yesterday's show if you want on 890kdxu.com. Just click on listen and then on demand, and the podcasts are there, and you can hear what was said. But we did go over the races, Republican Party, and let's face it, in Utah, if you win the Republican nomination, you're probably going to win the seat. It's like a 90-something, 99% chance or 98% chance you're going to win the general election, too. So governor is Spencer Cox versus Phil Lyman. Senate is Curtis, Walton, Wilson, and Staggs. U.S. House District 2, Jenkins versus Malloy. Malloy was elected again in a special election last year when Chris Stewart retired. Colby Jenkins has picked up a lot of big endorsements. Colby Jenkins, endorsed by Vivek Ramaswamy last night. He's also been endorsed by Mike Lee, Tommy Tuberville, Rick Scott, Rand Paul, among others. Celeste endorsed by Jim Jordan, as well as House. She has the support of House Speaker Mike Jacobson. So that one should be very interesting. I think it's going to be close. Attorney General Derek Brown, Frank Mylar, Rachel Terry, State Auditor Tina Cannon, Ricky Hatch, State Senate Chad Bennion versus Don Ipson, and State School Board. We are going to have next week, as a matter of fact, the two candidates for State School Board in Joanne Brinton and Kristen Norton on the show. They couldn't be on the same day, but we managed to clear some time for them to come on two different days and talk to you about their thoughts. This is one of the bigger school board elections, state school board elections, that there have ever been, because there are some controversy, as they say. There's some controversy brewing in the state school board and DEI, and you got book banning or book editing or whatever. You've got the transgender issues in schools, the pronoun. There's a lot of stuff going on at the state school board. So we'll talk to Joanne Brinton and Kristen Norton next week. We'll take a break right now. Be back with more on the Andy Griffin Show after this.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
Welcome back. 9:50 now on KDXU. A couple of things to talk about before we move on today. Out right now is a roadway safety ranking, basically ranking the most dangerous stretches of road in southern Utah. This is fascinating. The St. George Police Department put this out. Number one, two, and three are roads I use on a regular basis. So they ranked them based on the number of, teenage crashes, crashes involving intersectional, basically angled crashes, what they call them, head-on crashes, pedestrian danger, motorcycle crashes, mid-block angled crashes, so somebody pulls out in front of you or whatever, rear-end collisions, people not paying attention. The three least safe stretches of road in southern Utah. Number one, Sunset Boulevard between Dixie Drive and Bluff Street. So, okay, I mean, that's a small stretch of road. It can't be more than a tenth of a mile, right? But that stretch of road gets so much traffic, and there are so many dangers of, you know, accidents and people not paying attention. You've got basically a huge line of cars feeding in from Bluff Street onto Sunset. And then you have, of course, Dixie Drive trying to eventually merge onto there. You have that shopping plaza out there, the Sunset Plaza. You have people feeding in coming from the Snow Canyon area. Yeah, that's the number one most dangerous stretch of road in southern Utah. Sunset Boulevard between Dixie Drive and Bluff Street. Number two is right where I am right now, Bluff Street between Sunset Boulevard and St. George Boulevard. That's a little bit longer stretch, and it's 45 mile per hour stretch. It is a big old 7-lane road. Ranks high for everything except motorcycle crashes, that stretch of Bluff Street between Sunset and St. George Boulevard. And the number three on the least safe roads in St. George, in the southern Utah area, Riverside Drive between River Road and Mall Drive. You know where it goes from... basically right there by the post office, and it goes up over the hill and back down. And, it turns into, it doesn't go over the hill. It goes around the hill. That stretch, Riverside Drive from Mall Drive as it curves around to River Road, another dangerous area. Those are the top three dangerous areas, stretches of road in southern Utah. In fact, the top nine are in the top 10 are in St. George City. 11 and 12 are in Washington City. And I think number 17 is in Hurricane City. Other areas, let's see, just real quick. Red Cliffs Drive between St. George Boulevard and Gateway Drive is number four. St. George Boulevard and between 1000 East and River Road is number five. Bluff Street between 7 South and Main, number six. River Road, basically Bluff, River, Sunset, and Red Cliffs Drive are all really dangerous. So just be careful, be kind, but don't be stupid. As the dad used to say on the Goldbergs, he always used to tell his kids, don't be a moron. And he wasn't being mean to them. What he's saying is, you have in your regular life chances to make decisions based on logic and being smart. And he's telling them, don't make the wrong decision. Don't be a moron. So I always like that. Okay. This is pretty cool. We only have about 5 minutes. Well, I'm going to jump into it anyway. So, and we might talk about this more tomorrow. Have you heard about the Greater Idaho Movement? Okay, well, let me educate you if you haven't. Basically, about 60% of Oregon, 13 counties, 60% geographically, it's less than 50% for the total number of counties, but basically the eastern 60% or so of Oregon has voted. They want to pursue changing Idaho's borders and becoming a part of Idaho. You say, what? No, they can't do that. Actually, they can. They can pursue that. Basically, the right half or so of Oregon doesn't want to be with the weirdos and libs on the coast there in Portland. in that area. And so they've had votes, open votes with the citizens in 13 counties, including most recently a county called Crook County, has said, yeah, we would rather be an Idaho county instead of an Oregon county. The movement, which online they're calling it the most tangible and effective political rebellion in the history of America since the Revolution, it's pretty big deal. Imagine you are in Oregon, and if you have a postmark, right, you send somebody something from Oregon, or maybe they see your email address. Oh, he's from Oregon. He must be one of those granola liberal weirdos, right? I mean, you know, non-traditional type person. Anyway, and you say, well, actually, I'm from Eastern Oregon. We're just a few miles from Idaho, and we identify a lot more with Idahoans and their conservative political views than we do with the radical liberal coastal Oregon folks. So, again, Crook County is the latest, the 13th county to pass a measure. The measure is, let's see if I can find it. Basically, they haven't seceded from Oregon yet and joined Idaho, but they are voting to pursue how they can join it. And that would create a state, I think they're still going to call it Idaho, but they're calling it right now Greater Idaho. Basically, Idaho, you know, has a little panhandle that sticks up, and then the wide part on the bottom half of Idaho. It would be really, really wide on the bottom half now if those 13 counties from Eastern Oregon and Central Oregon join on. I love it. You know, I mean, sometimes you're stuck in an area and you're like, oh, I wish we could be different politically because we're not like them. And, you know, you might live in an area that just doesn't fit your beliefs. Your choices are to move or to deal with it. Well, some of these Oregon folks are like, I don't want to move and I don't want to deal with it. I want it to change. And so, Idaho, if this goes through, and it's going to take a process that will take years if it does ever really happen, Idaho would grow by an 80% geographic footprint. It would really be Greater Idaho and not just Idaho. Yeah, a big old chunk of Oregon would join Idaho. That'd be kind of weird. How long has our map been static? You know, ever since. I mean, even with Alaska and Hawaii joining in, not that long ago, relatively speaking. The lower 48 has been the lower 48 for a long, long time. 160 years or something like that, right? Maybe not officially as states, but basically it's been drawn up that way. I know the Oregon-Idaho border was drawn up 163 years ago. So a lot of the folks in Oregon are saying that the thing that really pushed them over the edge was the way Oregon, the state of Oregon, handled the whole COVID, the masking and the vaccines and all that stuff, where they saw their neighbors just a few miles away in Idaho take a much more calculated and measured approach. Oregon is accused of being, quote, heavy-handed, and that heavy-handedness has supercharged the Greater Idaho movement. Very interesting. Maybe it's a pipe dream. Maybe it will all happen someday, but I think it's cool. And I think instead of protests and violence and all that other stuff that it gives, I think, America a black eye a little bit. These guys are going about it the right way. They're voting for it. They're making change, taking the proper processes to make change and make Eastern Oregon Idaho, because they are like Idaho. And Greater Idaho might just be a real thing somewhere down the road. It's 9:59 on KDXU. Unfortunately, I got to step aside. Congratulations to the Washington County Water Conservancy District. They got a big grant, $20 million grant, to help the reuse system in Utah, basically to get us to try to recycle our water better instead of letting it go down the stream or seep into the ground. That's going to be cool. And I know Zach Renstrom and Celeste Malloy were pretty excited about that. I better go. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. Mello will join me on the air here on the Andy Griffin Show. Happy birthday to my dad, Rod Griffin, 89 years young today. We'll talk to you later.